This is Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel. King Size Truth from radio sized speakers.
You sent for me, sir?
Get the blood out of here!
Oh, Lordy Lord! He's desperate! Do what he says! Do what he says!
Are you trying to make me look stupid in front of the other guests? That sounds like a confession.
Darn you! God, you old cat!
Then the boy gets a cigar.
That's false advertising!
Welcome to another episode of Reverse Deception Radio. I'm your host, Gregory Carpenter, and you, my friends, you should be knocking on wood. And why is that? Well, just pray you're not in one of 37 countries. Which 37 countries are those? Well, those are the ones we're going to talk about today. You see, it's been said that the United States has killed almost 30 million people in 37, quote, victim nations since World War II. And today we're going to discuss that a little bit. Now, the causes for wars are very complex. And in some instances, nations other than the U.S. may have been responsible for some more deaths, or some of these deaths. But if the involvement of our nation appeared to have been a necessary cause of a war or conflict, it was considered responsible for the deaths in it. In other words, they probably would not have taken place if the U.S. had not used the heavy hand of its power. The military and economic power of the United States was crucial. Recently, there was a study that U.S. military forces were directly responsible for about 10 to 15 million deaths during Korea, Vietnam, and the two Iraqi wars. The Korean War also includes Chinese deaths, while the Vietnam War also includes fatalities in Cambodia and Laos. The American public probably is not aware of these numbers and knows even less about the proxy wars for which the United States is also responsible. In the latter wars, there were between 9 and 14 million deaths in Afghanistan, Angola, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, East Timor, Guatemala, Indonesia, Pakistan, and Sudan. But the victims are not just from big nations or one part of the world. The remaining deaths were in smaller ones, which constitute over half of the total number of nations. Virtually all parts of the world have been targets of U.S. intervention. The overall conclusion reached is that the United States is most likely responsible, since World War II, for deaths upward of 30 million people in wars and conflicts scattered all over the world. To the families and friends of these victims, it makes very little difference whether the cause were U.S. military actions, proxy military forces, the provision of U.S. military supplies or advisors, or other ways, such as economic pressures, sanctions applied by our nation. They had to make decisions about other things, such as finding lost loved ones, whether to become refugees and how to survive. And the pain and anger is spread even further. Some authorities estimate that there are as many as 10 wounded for each person who dies in wars. Their visible, continued suffering is a continuing reminder to their fellow countrymen. It is essential that Americans learn more about this topic so that they can begin to understand the pain that others feel. Someone once observed that the Germans during World War II chose not to know. We cannot allow history to say this about our Union. The question posed above is, how many September 11ths has the United States caused in other nations since World War II? The most rational answer is probably 10,000. Now just let that sink in for 1 second. 10,000 September 11ths caused by our Union. We received one September 11th. Not so easy to swallow, is it? Now generally speaking, the much smaller number of Americans who have died is not included in this analysis, not because they're not important, but because this analysis focuses on the impact of U.S. actions on its adversaries. In another part of this series, we're going to cover internal U.S. genocide and what these United States have done to themselves in comparison to the bigger numbers of how many people die every year. We'll look at not only how much we have inflicted on others, but what we have done to ourselves. Back to the war. An accurate count of the number of deaths is not easy to achieve, and the collection of data was undertaken with this full realization. It was a long-term study. A lot of work went into gathering the numbers. And the estimates will probably be revised later on by somebody else once this data is shared. But undoubtedly, the total will be in the tens of millions. The difficulty of gathering reliable information is shown by two estimates in the context. For several years, I've heard many times on the radio, 3 million Cambodians had been killed under the rule of the Khmer Rouge. However, in recent years, the figure was dropped to 1 million. Another example is that the number of persons estimated to have died in Iraq due to sanctions after the first U.S.-Iraq war was over 1 million. But more recently, a lower estimate of about a half a million, has become the mainstay. Often, information about wars is revealed only much later when people decide to speak out. When more secret information is revealed due to persistent efforts of a few, or after special congressional committees make reports. I gave examples where the numbers went down, but believe you me, there are estimates where the numbers go up and up and up. You know, in recent wars involving the United States, it's not uncommon to hear statements like, we don't do body counts, and references to something called collateral damage as a blasphemous euphemism for dead and wounded. Life is cheap for some, especially those who manipulate people on the battlefield as if it were a chessboard, moving the pieces knowing sacrifices were coming. To get the exact numbers is difficult, but the estimations and analysis that went into this are nothing short of heroic. We should always try to be as accurate as possible. We should always try to be correct. Think of how many people and how much effort they put into figuring out how many people the Nazis killed. So let's take that moment. Let's talk about the nations themselves, where the people, where the deaths are. We'll not use terms like collateral damage or anything sick like that. Is it collateral damage when Norwegian authorities fly a drone into your home in New Hampshire because there's a terrorist at a wedding two blocks away from your house, and the Norwegians blow up your house and kill your family? Is that what collateral damage is all about? Life is not cheap. We don't use farcical terms to excuse away deaths. So let's look at these 37 countries. Afghanistan. U.S. is responsible for at least a million, probably 2 million deaths during the war between the Soviet Union and Afghanistan. Oh, wait, that's before we invaded Afghanistan ourselves. Yeah, that's right. That's right. They lured the Soviet Union into invading Afghanistan. It's what we do. It's how we roll, baby. You know, the Soviet Union at the time had friendly relations with Afghanistan, which had a secular government. And the Soviets feared that if the government became fundamentalist, this change could spill over into the Soviet Union. And what did we do? We helped them out, folks. You know, in 1998, in an interview with the Parisian publication Le Nouvel Observateur, Brzezinski, who was an advisor to Carter, admitted that he had been responsible for instigating aid to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, which caused the Soviets to invade. Direct quote, folks. According to the official version of history, what? Yeah, this is Brzezinski. According to the official version of history, CIA aid to the Mujahideen began in 1980. That is to say, after the Soviet army invaded Afghanistan on 24 December 1979. But the reality, secretly guarded until now, is completely otherwise. Indeed, it was July 3, 1979, that President Carter signed the first directive for secret aid to the opponents of the pro-Soviet regime in Kabul. And that very day, I wrote a note to the president in which I explained to him that, in my opinion, this aid was going to induce a Soviet military intervention. Brzezinski justified laying this trap, since he said it gave the Soviet Union its Vietnam and caused the breakup of the Soviet Union. Regret what, he said? That secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap, and you want me to regret it? Unquote. The CIA spent $5 to $6 billion on its operation in Afghanistan in order to bleed the Soviet Union. When that 10-year war ended, over a million people were dead, and Afghan heroin had captured 60% of the U.S. market. The U.S. has been responsible directly for about 12,000 deaths in Afghanistan, many of which were resulted from the bombing in retaliation for the attacks on U.S. property on September 11, 2001. Subsequently, U.S. troops invaded that country. And those numbers will be presented separately. And of course, we're not going to forget that the 60% market share for heroin are numbers that lead to death also. Angola. An indigenous armed struggle against Portuguese rule in Angola began in 1961. In 1977, an Angolan government was recognized by the UN. Although the U.S. was one of the few nations that opposed this action in 1986, the U.S. approved material assistance to UNITA, a group that was trying to overthrow the government. Even today, this struggle, which has involved many nations at times, continues. The U.S. intervention was justified to the U.S. public as a reaction to the intervention of 50,000 Cuban troops in Angola. However, according to Piero Gliese, a history professor at Johns Hopkins University, the reverse was true. The Cuban intervention came as a result of a CIA-financed covert action via neighboring Zaire and a drive on the Angolan capital by the U.S. ally, South Africa. Three separate estimates put the body count between 300 and 750,000. Bolivia. Hugo Banzer was a leader of a representative regime in Bolivia in the 70s. The U.S. had been disturbed when a previous leader nationalized the tin mines and distributed land to Indian peasants. Later, that action to benefit the poor was reversed. Banzer, who was trained at the U.S.-operated School of the Americas in Panama. We're going to talk about the School of the Americas one day. Oh, boy. And he was later trained at Fort Hood, Texas. Came back from exile frequently to confer with U.S. Air Force Major Robert London. In 1971, he staged a successful coup with the help of the U.S. Air Force radio system. In the first years of his dictatorship, he received twice as military assistance from the U.S. as in the previous dozen years together. A few years later, the Catholic Church denounced an army massacre of striking tin workers in 1975. Banzer, assisted by information provided by the CIA, was able to target and locate leftist priests and nuns. His anti-clergy strategy, known as the Banzer Plan, was adopted by nine other Latin American dictatorships in 1977. He had been accused of being responsible for 400 deaths during his tenure. The United States was responsible for many, many more. The reason we're winning the war on terror is because of the assistance that we have from all of our allies and participant help. Q. Puccini. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present the NATO participants who are assisting us. Albania, Belgium, Bulgaria, Canada, Croatia, Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Iceland, Italy, Latvia, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Montenegro, Netherlands, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, Turkey. Other countries supporting Afghanistan, Cameroon, Egypt, Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, Lebanon, Libya, Malai, Nigeria, Pakistan, Philippines, Somalia, Syria, SDF, Yemen. International missions supporting the effort: NATO, ISAF, Operation Enduring Freedom Allies, Northern Alliance, mostly defunct, Multinational Force Iraq, Combined Joint Task Force Horn of Africa, Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve. And then, of course, we have other participants. These participants support in a variety of ways and at a variety of levels. Algeria, Andorra, Armenia, Australia, Austria, Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Belarus, Benin, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brunei, Burkina Faso, Burundi, Cambodia, Chad, Colombia, Congo, Cyprus, Djibouti, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Ethiopia, Finland, Georgia, Ghana, Honduras, India, Indonesia, Iran, Ireland, Israel, Japan, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Kenya, South Korea, Kosovo, Kuwait, Kyrgyzstan, Laos, Liechtenstein, Macedonia, Malaysia, Malta, Mauritania, Mexico, Mongolia, Morocco, Moldova, Myanmar, Nepal, New Zealand, Nicaragua, Niger, Northern Cyprus, Oman, Palestine, Panama, Qatar, Rwanda, Saudi Arabia? Are you kidding me? Senegal, Serbia, Seychelles, Sierra Leone, Singapore, South Africa, Sri Lanka, Sweden, Switzerland, neutral, my foot. Damn the torpedoes. Full speed ahead. Taiwan, Tajikistan, Thailand, Togo, Tonga, Tunisia, Turkmenistan, Uganda, Ukraine, United Arab Emirates, Uzbekistan, and Vietnam. With friends like that, how could we lose the war on terror? Next up, Cambodia. U.S. bombing of Cambodia had already been underway for several years in secret under the Johnson and Nixon administrations. But when President Nixon openly began bombing in preparation for a land assault on Cambodia, it caused major protests in the U.S. against the Vietnam War. There is little awareness today of the scope of these bombings and the human suffering that was involved. Immense damage was done to the villages and cities in Cambodia, causing thousands and thousands of refugees and internal displacement of the population. This unstable situation enabled the Khmer Rouge, a small political party led by Pol Pot, to assume power. Over the years, we've repeatedly heard about the Khmer Rouge's role in the death of millions in Cambodia. Without any acknowledgement being made, this mass killing was made possible courtesy of the U.S. government and the bombing of that nation, which devastated it by death, injuries, hunger, and dislocation of the population. The U.S. bears the responsibility not only for the deaths from the bombings, but also for those resulting from the activities of the Khmer Rouge. A total exceeding 2.5 million people died as a direct result of the U.S. bombing campaign and the activities that kicked off after we destabilized that country. Even when Vietnam later invaded Cambodia in 1979, the CIA was still supporting the Khmer Rouge. A sad chapter in a sad book. Chad. Estimates say 40,000 people in Chad were killed, and as many as 200,000 to 250,000 tortured by a government headed by Hissène Habré, who was brought to power in June 1982 with the help of CIA money and arms. He remained in power for 8 years. Human Rights Watch claimed that Habré was responsible for thousands of killings. In 2001, while living in Senegal, he was almost tried for crimes committed by him in Chad. However, a court there blocked these proceedings. Then, human rights activists decided to pursue the case in Belgium because some of Habré's torture victims lived there. The U.S. in June 2003 told Belgium that it risked losing its status as host to NATO's headquarters if it allowed such a legal proceeding to happen. So the result was that the law that allowed victims to file complaints in Belgium for atrocities committed abroad was repealed. However, 2 months later, a new law was passed which made special provisions for a continuation of the case against Habré. When above the table doesn't work, you stoop and you go below the table to get the work done. Chile. The CIA intervened in Chile in the 1958 and the 1964 elections. Anybody who's complaining about someone else messing with our elections really needs to, you know, get an advanced degree in awareness in what the hell's going on out there. In 1970, a socialist candidate, Salvador Allende, was elected president. The CIA wanted to incite a military coup to prevent his inauguration, but the Chilean Army's chief of staff, General René Schneider, opposed this action. The CIA then planned, along with some people in the Chilean military, to assassinate Schneider. This plan failed. Allende took office. President Nixon was not to be dissuaded, and he ordered the CIA to create a coup climate, making the economy scream. Direct quote, "Make the economy scream," he said. What followed? Guerrilla warfare, arsons, bombing, sabotage, terrorist activities. ITT and other U.S. corporations with Chilean holdings sponsored demonstrations and strikes. Finally, on September 11th, 1973, Allende died either by suicide or assassination. Pardon me. At that time, Henry Kissinger, U.S. Secretary of State, said the following regarding Chile. Quote, "I don't see why we need to stand by and watch a government go communist because of the irresponsibility of its own people," unquote. During 17 years of terror under Allende's successor, General Augusto Pinochet, ring a bell, anybody? Yeah. An estimated 3,000 Chileans were killed. Others were tortured. And hundreds disappeared. Colombia. One estimate is that 67,000 deaths have occurred from the 60s until about 2010 due to support by the U.S. of Colombian state terrorism. According to a 1994 Amnesty International report, more than 20,000 people were killed for political reasons in Colombia from 1986 to 1994, mainly by the military and its paramilitary allies. Amnesty International alleged that, quote, U.S. supplied military equipment ostentatiously delivered for use against narcotics traffickers was being used by the Colombian military to commit abuses in the name of counterinsurgency, unquote. In 2002, another estimate was made that 3,500 people died each year in a U.S.-funded civilian war in Colombia. By 1996, Human Rights Watch issued a report, Assassination Squads in Colombia, which revealed that CIA agents went to Colombia in 91 to help the military to train undercover agents in anti-subversion activities. In more recent years, the U.S. government has provided assistance under, quote, Plan Colombia, unquote. The Colombian government has been charged with using most of the funds for destruction of crops and support of the paramilitary groups, leading to the deaths of tens of thousands of people. And now, friends and countrymen, if the wise and learned philosophers of the elder world, the first observers of nutation and aberration, the discoverers of maddening ether and invisible planets, the inventors of Congreve rockets and shrapnel shells, should find their hearts disposed to inquire, what has America done for the benefit of mankind? Let our answer be this: America, with the same voice which spoke herself into existence as a nation, proclaimed to mankind the inextinguishable rights of human nature and the only lawful foundations of government. America, in the assembly of nations, since her admission among them, has invariably, though often fruitlessly, held forth to them the hand of honest friendship, of equal freedom, of generous reciprocity. She has uniformly spoken among them, though often to heedless and often to disdainful ears, the language of equal liberty, of equal justice, and of equal rights. She has, in the lapse of nearly half a century, without a single exception, respected the independence of other nations while asserting and maintaining her own. She has abstained from interference in the concerns of others, even when conflict has been for principles to which she clings, as to the last vital drop that visits the heart. She has seen that probably for centuries to come, all the contests of that Akeldama, the European world, will be contests of inveritable power and emerging right. Wherever the standard of freedom and independence has been or shall be unfurled, there will her heart, her benedictions, and her prayers be. But she goes not abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is the well-wisher to the freedom and independence of all. She is the champion and vindicator only of her own. She will commend the general cause by the countenance of her voice and the benignant sympathy of her example. She well knows that by one enlisting under other banners than her own, were they even the banners of foreign independence, she would involve herself beyond the power of extradition in all the wars of interest and intrigue, of individual avarice, envy, and ambition, which assume the colors and usurp the standard of freedom. The fundamental maxims of her policy would insensibly change from liberty to force. She might become the dictatress of the world. She would be no longer the ruler of her own spirit. America's glory is not domination, but liberty. Her march is the march of the mind. She has a spear and a shield, but the motto upon her shield is freedom, independence, peace. This has been her declaration. This has been, as far as her necessary intercourse with the rest of mankind would permit, her practice. Wow, wasn't that glorious? That was the Soviet Red Army Men's Choir singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. How appropriate. Cuba's up next, and I think everybody knows a lot about Cuba. First thing we're going to start with is the Bay of Pigs invasion, April 18th, 1961, which ended after 3 days. 114 of the invading force were killed, 1,189 were taken prisoners, and a few escaped to waiting U.S. ships that were in support. The captured exiles were quickly tried, a few executed, and the rest sentenced to 30 years in prison for treason. These exiles were released after 20 months in exchange for $53 million in food and medicine. Some people estimate that the number of Cuban forces killed ranged from 2,000 to 4,000. Another estimate is that 1,800 Cuban forces were killed on an open highway by napalm. This appears to have been a precursor of the Highway of Death in Iraq in 1991, when U.S. forces mercilessly annihilated large numbers of Iraqis on a highway. Cuba is actually the gateway to numerous other deaths. And we'll look at Cuba a little bit later on in a little different light. Something that I think will entice you even more. But let's move on. Let's talk about what was formerly known as Zaire. These days, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Mass violence was instigated in 1879 by King Leopold in Belgium. The Congo's population was reduced by 10 million people over a period of 20 years, which some has referred to as Leopold's genocide. The U.S. has been responsible for about a third of that many deaths in that nation in a more recent history. In 1960, the Congo became an independent state, with Patrice Lumumba being its first prime minister. He was assassinated, with the CIA being implicated, although some say that his murder was actually the responsibility of Belgium. But nevertheless, the CIA was planning to kill him. Before his assassination, the CIA sent one of its scientists, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, to the Congo carrying lethal biological material intended for use in Lumumba's assassination. The virus would have been able to produce a fatal disease indigenous to the Congo area of Africa and was transported in a diplomatic pouch. Much of the time in recent years, there's been civil war within the Democratic Republic of the Congo, fomented often by the U.S. and other nations, including neighboring nations. In April 1977, Newsday reported that the CIA was secretly supporting efforts to recruit several hundred mercenaries in the U.S. and Great Britain to serve alongside Zaire's army. In that same year, the U.S. provided $15 million of military support to the Zairean President Mobutu to fend off an invasion by a rival group operating in Angola. In May 1979, the U.S. sent several millions of dollars of aid to Mobutu, who had been condemned 3 months earlier by the State Department for human rights violations. During the Cold War, the U.S. funneled over $300 million in weapons into Zaire. $100 million in military training was provided to them. In 2001, it was reported that U.S. Congressional Committee that American companies, including one linked to former President George Bush Sr., were stoking the Congo for monetary gains. There's an international battle over resources in that country, with over 125 companies and individuals being implicated. One of these substances is coltan, which is used when you manufacture your cell phone. The Dominican Republic. In 1962, Juan Bosch became president of the Dominican Republic. He advocated such programs as land reform and public works programs. This didn't bode well for his future relationship with the U.S., and after only 7 months in office, he was deposed by a CIA coup. In 1965, when a group was trying to reinstall him to his office, President Johnson said, quote, "This Bosch is no good," unquote. Assistant Secretary of State Thomas Mann replied, quote, "He's no good at all. If we don't get a decent government in there, Mr. President, we get another Bosch. It's going to be another sinkhole," unquote. 2 days later, a U.S. invasion started, and 22,000 soldiers and Marines entered the Dominican Republic, with about 3,000 Dominicans dying during the fighting. The cover excuse for doing this was that this was done to protect foreigners. It's right about this time that you should hear the wah, 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 wah going off in your head. You see a pattern here, folks? Is this not horrendous? We're not even halfway through this list here. And you can see there's so many things, so many historical facts that were never brought out before. Things that you were never told. I know you weren't told. Things that have been classified up until recently. It's more important now than ever for us to step up and demand of our government the answers to the things that they refuse to give us answers to. Let me tell you the story of East Timor. Now, the plight of East Timor has been something I would say has been more interesting than not over the last 45 years or so. You see, in December 1975, Indonesia invaded East Timor after Portugal had abandoned all of its overseas provinces. The incursion was launched the day after U.S. President Gerald Ford and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had left Indonesia, where they had given President Suharto permission to use American arms, which under U.S. law could not be used for aggression. Daniel Moynihan, U.S. ambassador to the U.N., said that the U.S. wanted, quote, "things to turn out as they did," unquote. The result was an estimated 200,000 dead out of a population of about 700,000. 16 years later, on November 12, 1991, 217 East Timorese protesters in Dili, many of them children marching for a memorial service, were gunned down by Indonesian Kopassus shock troops, who were headed by U.S. trained commanders Prabowo, Subianto, son-in-law of General Suharto, and Kiki Shinakari. Trucks were seen dumping bodies into the ocean. It was called the Dili Massacre, and it was a turning point for the independence cause. And an East Timor solidarity movement grew in Portugal, Australia, and in other Western countries. You see, because when Indonesia invaded back in 1975, it was right after Timor had declared their independence from Portugal. But because we feared a communist state within the Indonesian archipelago, we, along with the British, the Australians, and the Indonesians, launched an invasion in December 1975. Indonesia declared East Timor its 27th province, July 17, 1976. Wonder why you didn't hear about that. Maybe we were celebrating our bicentennial. The UN Security Council opposed the invasion, but we did it anyways. The Indonesian occupation of East Timor was marked by violence, brutality, and death. Everywhere they turned, death. As a matter of fact, from 1990 to 2000, the population only grew 5%. Whereas in every other year, it grew by at least 15%. That's how many people died. Next, we're going to talk about a couple of my, well, I would call them the U.S. government's biggest hits. Let's talk about El Salvador, shall we? When I was a youngin, junior in high school, the Civil War broke out in El Salvador, and it lasted for 11 years. That's a long civil war. Sure is. Only about 8 million people in that country, and thank goodness the U.S. gave $6 billion in aid to support the government, trying to crush a movement to bring social justice, quote, unquote. Is it really our job to do that? I don't know. During that time, the U.S. military advisors demonstrated methods of torture on teenage prisoners, according to an interview with a deserter from the Salvadorian army that was published in the New York Times. The former member of the Salvadorian National Guard testified that he was a member of a squad of 12 who found people who they were told were guerrillas and tortured them. Part of the training he received was in torture at a U.S. location somewhere in Panama. School of the Americas. Sorry. About 900 villagers were massacred in the village of El Mozote in 1981. 10 of the 12 El Salvadorian government soldiers cited as participating in this act were graduates of the School of the Americas, operated by the U.S. They were only a small part of about 75,000 people killed during the war. According to a 1993 United Nations Truth Commission report, over 96% of the human rights violations carried out during the war were committed by the Salvadorian Army or the paramilitary death squads associated with the Salvadoran Army. That commission links graduates of the School of the Americas to many notorious killings. The New York Times and the Washington Post followed with scathing articles. And in 1996, the White House Oversight Board issued a report that supported many of the charges against that school. That same year, the Pentagon released formerly classified reports indicating that graduates were trained in killing, extortion, and physical abuse for interrogations, false imprisonment, and other methods of control. Grenada. Everyone remembers 1983, President Reagan got the 82nd Airborne up in the air, and they swooped in there and saved all those American medical students. Folks, the CIA began to destabilize Grenada in 1979 after Maurice Bishop became the president, partly because he refused to join the quarantine of Cuba. The campaign against him resulted in his overthrow and the invasion by the U.S. of Grenada on October 25th, 1983, with about 277 people dying. It was falsely charged that an airport was being built in Grenada that could be used to attack the U.S. And it was also erroneously claimed that the lives of American medical students on that island were in danger. Raise your hand if you in the audience are scared of Grenada invading the U.S. I can wait, but I won't wait all day. Fast forward to Guatemala. In 1951, Jacobo Arbenz was elected president of Guatemala. He appropriated some unused land operated by the United Fruit Company and compensated the company. That company then started a campaign to paint Arbenz as a tool of an international conspiracy and hired about 300 mercenaries who sabotaged oil supplies and trains. In 1954, a CIA-orchestrated coup put him out of office and he left the country. During the next 40 years, various regimes killed thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people. In 1999, the Washington Post reported that a historical clarification commission concluded that at least 200,000 people had been killed during the Civil War and that there had been 42,000 individual human rights violations, 29,000 of them fatal, 92% of which were committed by the Army. The commission further reported that the U.S. government and the CIA had pressured the Guatemalan government into suppressing the guerrilla movement by ruthless means. According to the commission, between 1981 and 1983, the military government of Guatemala, financed and supported by the U.S. government and the CIA, destroyed some 400 Mayan villages in a campaign of genocide. I got the commission report. One of the documents made available to the commission was a 1966 memo from the U.S. State Department official who described how a, quote, safe house was set up in the palace for use by Guatemalan security agents and their U.S. contacts. This was the headquarters for the Guatemalan dirty war against leftist insurgents and suspected allies. Mayan villages. Genocide. That's us. Who'd have thunk it? Well, that's quite a plateful for the first in this series. So just think, folks. Think once, think twice, think thrice. There's a reason. And the reason you think things happen are not the reason they happen. It's never been that way. Yes, the U.S., we have killed more than 30 million people in 37 countries since World War II. Just let that sink in. And as we go through this, we're going to have a couple other, I guess we'll call them different tangents, and we're going to go off in a couple different directions, especially next week. We're going to explore some other things that the U.S. has been involved in. But it all comes down to this. How many September 11ths has the United States caused in other nations since World War II? I'm Greg Carpenter. This has been Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel. Thank you.
This is Reverse Deception Radio. Veritas Radio Network. Crusade Channel.
Don't hack like my son.
And don't hack like my dad.
King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers.
Knows all and sees all.
Anyone here not earn their living from the government one way or another?
0.0.
We are building a fighting force of extraordinary magnitude.
They are savages.
We forge our spirits in the same tradition as our ancestors.
Good night, we die.
All that Team America does is create new enemies.
We live in a society of laws.
You can't handle the truth.
You are a man of extraordinary magnitude.
Boy, you are nuts. NVTS nuts.
And of course we're going to throw poo at him.
You wouldn't dare.
You are talking to a man who has laughed in the face of death, sneered at doom, and chuckled at catastrophe.
Everything's fine.
You have our gratitude.
The guns, the shooting. Now I understand what it is to be an American. Please, I'm begging you. Let me be your driver. Let me kill someone tonight.
Dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.